Now, the 11 plus was abolished years ago, but transfer tests for grammar schools are still very much a reality. Thousands of children across Northern Ireland took part in the first wave of the tests on Saturday, and there are more to come. So are the tests set by grammar school a permanent solution? Is this as good as it gets? And how well does it serve children and schools? Since the 11 plus was abolished in 2008, children now sit on regulated transfer tests set by two different bodies. What do you think at home? Is academic selection necessary or damaging? Should we just accept that grammar school entrance tests are here to stay? Well, I'm joined by Ralph McGee, principal of Andrews Memorial Primary in Cumber, Andy McMoran, the former principal at Ashfield Boys School in Belfast, and Maggie Sporbrick, whose son sat the test on Saturday. Morning to all of you. Maggie, I'll come to you first. How did the weekend go, Maggie?
Well, actually, Tara, it was a lot better than we expected, because it seemed as though we've been thinking about this for such a long time, and it is a huge amount of pressure. You know, all year they've been working towards this test, but actually, as it turned out, we're very lucky that our little boy, Harry, is phlegmatic and cheerful. So actually, he was on Saturday morning. The house was rattling with nerves, but it was me that was nervous, and Harry was actually completely fine.
And is that down to you as a parent kind of shielding him from it, or was it a combination of the school, or is it just his personality?
Well, I think it's probably a combination of all three of those things, because he is a pretty phlegmatic little fellow anyway, so we're lucky that way. But also the school was very calm and reassuring about it all, and I said to him, Harry, it's worth working hard for, but it's not worth shedding one single tear over. So we just said the usual parent thing of saying, do your best, you know, but it doesn't really matter in the end. Just do your best and we'll love you anyway.
And what about your fellow parents at the school? Were there a lot of nerves around it? Were people feeling under pressure?
Yes, well, I know that, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people about this and colleagues at work with children going through the same thing. And you hear all sorts of different stories, and I know that there will be families who were not quite as lucky as we were on Saturday morning with Harry, and that, you know, I hear stories of tears and kind of, you know, sleepless nights and huge amounts of stress, which is a really, really difficult thing for children of that age to go through, I think. I worry that it would, if you had a child who was susceptible to those levels of stress, that it might put them off, you know, put them off education, put them off exams. They've got many, many years of education, exams and assessment ahead of them. And I would worry that in some cases this could be kind of an indicator of bad things to come.
Do you think, is there an acceptance now, though, that they're here to stay?
Well, I suppose so, because I was just saying to my husband this morning that, we've been hearing about the 11 plus and the transfer test and the changes for so many years, and for years before I even had children. And I can't believe that here I am, you know, with a 10-year-old going through the same thing. And to be honest, I think it's a bit of a shambles that the system is inconsistent, that nobody kind of, it's unclear, nobody really knows what's going on. I would have much preferred had Harry not had to go through it. But we all know, really, as parents, when it comes down to it, whatever we think, whatever our politics are, whatever we think about the big ideas in life, that when it comes down to it, all you want is the best for your child, and you want your child to go to the best school that they're capable of going to. So you play the game and you go along with it.
And is that part of the problem, that people might have views pro or anti-selection, but when it comes down to it, when it comes to your own child, you set those aside and just try to drive them? Is there a pressure? Are parents putting pressure on children?
I'm sure that they are. I'm sure that they are, because everybody, every parent is different, and people have different attitudes to these kind of things. But the one common thing that we do all have is that we want the best for our children, and we want them to do better. In some cases, we want them to do better than we did ourselves. I think that even if it's a kind of a subconscious, subtle kind of a pressure, people do put a lot of pressure on their children to different sorts of levels. We certainly tried not to do that with our children and with Harry. But you kind of, you know, in the end, you do want the best for them, and you want them to work hard and do well.
Ralph McGee, is that a familiar story you're hearing this morning?
Very familiar. Very familiar, Tara, yes. I think, you know, that we've talked endlessly about this over many, many years. And the problem is still, for me, you know, well, there are problems from a number of perspectives, but certainly one of them is the fact that according to the Department of Education, there is no transfer procedure, and yet for the reality, for a huge number of schools, and it's not every school, but I'm speaking on behalf of where I work, and also I'm speaking on behalf of the area as well, because it's the same in all our schools, it's very much a reality. We don't know whether they're working towards one test. We don't know why. You don't know really the rationale behind it, whether anybody's trying to change it, whether the department are just accepting it. And for us as schools, as primary schools, we feel very exposed because we are put in the situation of trying to serve our parents and our children as best as we possibly can. And that, quite frankly, Tara, means some degree of preparation for transfer tests, which are unregulated and aren't sponsored by the state, aren't supported by the state, and yet the Department of Education, you know, appears to be, you know, well, I don't know if turning a blind eye is maybe quite the exact term, but certainly they're not really doing anything about it. They're building new grammar schools. And I'm just reading a section of the ETI report, the Chief Inspector's report, saying that they're urging politicians to come to, it says the ETI recommends strongly that politicians reach consensus on the issue of transfer as a matter of urgency in the best interests of all children. But that doesn't appear to be happening.
And is that the case? Is there a certain postcode lottery when it comes to your school? Because some schools are very opposed to preparing children, and then other schools, I'm imagining, come under enormous pressure from the parents that the teachers do some sort of preparation.
Well, yes. I mean, certainly, I think it's reflective. You know, it depends what access there is or what post-primary provision there is in an area. I mean, from Cumber, we're looking at schools, you know, local grammar schools, and then schools in Belfast as well. And within the South Eastern Board, the majority of grammar school places are found from children who are living in the South Eastern Board go to school in Belfast. So that's just something that's always been here. I suppose our parents have access to a huge number of quality schools, non-selective, by the way, as well as selective. But there is this sense that if your child has academic potential, or you believe them and you've been told that they have, and you'll by the age of 10, you'll know comfortably whether or not they do, there is this sense, well, then the grammar schools offer the best chance of maybe reaching their potential. That's the view of some parents. It's the view of the people who put their children in for these tests.
And is there clear guidance from the department on whether or not you should be preparing children for the test?
It's absolutely crystal clear, and I'll read you another extract if you forgive me, but it says, for primary, this is advice to P6 parents, which we are told to give out. It says, the school should not facilitate unregulated entrance test arrangements in any way by supplying support materials, carrying out any preparation for unregulated tests during core teaching hours, offering afternoon coaching and exam technique, or by providing familiarisation with the test environment. Now, that's what it says in black and white. There's no, there are 54 children in RP7, 48 people just would expect me not to completely ignore that.
And do you?
Yeah.
Was very honest of you. You know, are you worried about the department taking action against you, or do you think they do, as you say, turn a blind eye?
Well, I think it would be my job as the principal of Andrews Memorial. If I was a principal in a different school with a different type of community and different expectations, I'd be doing the job differently. But my job is to serve our community, and in that sense, it is to support parents' wishes. Whenever I see parents in the transfer interview, which is after the results come out, that's kind of when I earn my money, looking people eye to eye and being able to send them out with feeling satisfied that the school has provided the support and that the parents feel satisfied that we've done so. And it's a very, very simple, in a sense, it's a very simple process. I'm an administrative officer in that sense. I coordinate the filling of the form should they wish me to. The department don't really wish us to, but anyway, I still do, or offer that anyway. And our parents seem happy with that.
And are you going out on a limb, or are you aware of other principals, your fellow principals in various different schools, doing exactly the same thing?
Well, unless I'm going to be exposed as being some sort of fly-by-night individual, the vast majority of people that I work with do exactly the same thing. They may do it in slightly different ways, but that passage that I read out to you came from the department, and that had to be handed to our P6 parents. So essentially what they're saying is, if you think the school is doing this, then complain.
But it'd be good to know how many parents have actually squealed on the school, wouldn't it?
Well, there are none here, as far as I'm aware of, although I suppose somebody might come up with a van and have some men in white coats, but we'll wait and see.
But it's in all seriousness, it's a shambles. If you have a situation where the Department of Education is saying one thing and schools are doing something entirely different.
I think it's an absolute disgrace. It's an absolute and utter disgrace. There's no other word for it. To have a system whereby unregulated tests are still in place 6 years or 7 years, whatever it is, after it was allegedly removed from the statute books is just a disgrace. And what worries me is this sense that nobody is... We were told, we were given all these stories with people who would appeal it and people would, people who said, my child has every right to go to the nearest school, which may be a grammar school, and they shouldn't sit tests. Well, none of that appears to have happened. And, you know, fair enough, people maybe weren't able to do that at the time. But the point that, from our perspective as primary schools, who are really the soft underbelly of the system, to be frank, because, you know, we're easily got at, and we are in the middle here because we're trying to teach the children and in that sense prepare them. There isn't clear guidance. The fact that there are two tests is a nonsense. You pay for one, you don't pay for the other. One of them is two tests, one in English, one in maths, 45 and 50 minutes. The other one is three tests, English and maths, over an hour. You know, there's an inconsistency, and there seems to be the two opposing companies, if you like, are pursuing that. And let's be honest, and everybody's aware of this, it's not fully separated on sectarian lines, but as broadly as the maintained sector tend to support the GAL, the controlled sector support the AQE, and some schools throw something else into the pack and have both. So you've got children and parents even more confused.
Andy McMorrin, I'm just interested to hear your thoughts, because the secondary school sector barely gets a mention when this is argued.
Yeah, I think that the misconception is you talk grammar school's good, high school's bad, and that's certainly not the case. But the longer that the whole controversial views go on to 11+, the attack seems to be on academic selection. I'm 100% for academic selection, but I'm totally against the 11+. That exam is obscene, and I think the powers that be, if they keep that, you know, stirring the pot, they're hoping that people will attack the academic selection. And that's not the case. I mean, when you get this I think that the primary schools are under enough pressure at the minute, but I mean, I talk to primary school principals when the kids are fairly young, and they say they can tell you whether a kid should be directed towards a vocational, an academic, or even a mixture of both. And that's the one size does not fit all here, and that's really what they're after. The longer they keep this stirring up, people will go, well, let's get rid of the grammar schools. And that seems to be the underlying issue.
And what is this obsession with grammar schools?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. They're very, very, very good institutions. What they do is the output at the end is excellent. But I was a principal of a very successful high school, and what we did was what came out at the end was excellent. I mean, if they're talking in terms of, and I understand their statistics, that they've got this underachievement element of 27%. You know, let's look at that 27% and stop trying to change the whole system.
I think it's important, and I agree with Andy there entirely. You know, there is no doubt. I mean, there isn't any doubt. Year on year on year, Northern Ireland GCSE and A-level results are very, very high within the UK. But what is conveniently not addressed and not maybe promoted, well, certainly not promoted, but not highlighted, is this big tail where children are leaving with, you know, who are underachieving at GCSE. Because maybe GCSE isn't the right shoe in town for those particular kids. That's maybe another story. But, you know, we can't have a world-class system just for the clever ones or the academically clever ones. That's just not acceptable as educationalists. You know, parents are caught completely in the middle. You know, if a child is very capable academically, they should be allowed to excel in that, absolutely, whether it's at a non-selective or a selective school. You know, whatever that means to somebody. But and we shouldn't dismiss the grammar school achievements at all. But what we have to take account of is the amount of respect and value given to the non-selective system and the systems therein by which those children are achieving and by which we measure them.
So is the executive and the assembly failing children?
Well, I think they are, yes. I think they are failing children.
Yeah, Tara, I sat for 4 years in the whole literacy and numeracy panel to look right across the board at all this, and to be honest with you, very little has been done. The selection thing is a lovely smokescreen. Let's put that up, and instead of looking at, leave the grammar schools alone, leave the good high schools alone, and take a look at that tail. And we put forward a lot of strategies that could have looked at that and dealt with the kids that are underachieving. I mean, let's be honest, it's 27%. You're still going to get a certain percentage that are underachieving. but you could reduce that 27% as opposed to worry about this massive big, you know, selection smokescreen that's going on. Because, look, I'll go back to what I said at the start. The 11-plus exam is obscene, but academic selection is not.
So,
and over 7 years at a primary school, I think you could find it would be easy, not easy enough to show, but you could look at what is vocational, what's academic, and which kids can do both, a mixture.
And what about the whole issue of tutoring? Maggie, I want to come back to you. Did you go for tutoring?
We did, and the because I wasn't because of this very situation of the schools being told that they mustn't engage with this process at all, and I was worried then that Harry would you know, because he's a bright boy, but I wanted to be sure that he was being taught to pass the test, as it were, you know. But I you know, and I know that the schools, I know the head teacher. That they're told very clearly that they mustn't engage with the process, and you know, I don't want to get the head teacher into any kind of trouble. But he was very, I mean, he was
in good company with Ralph.
Yes, I think he was in good company. Let's put it like that. But he was very, just very, very supportive of the whole process in the end. So so we did do the tutoring. I was kind of aware while I was doing it, thinking, oh, this goes against all my principles. You know, and if you'd asked me 15, 20 years ago, I would have said, oh, absolutely not, that I wouldn't engage with that kind of thing. If the child is bright enough, they'll be bright enough. But I'm afraid that I did the usual crumbling thing when it came to the point, you know, do I want to take a risk with my child's future? Well, no, I don't.
And Ralph, that's the problem, isn't it? That because there's no certainty about whether schools are going to prepare for the tests or not, then parents do feel that they should get tutors. Was that a common thing in your school?
Yes, I mean, I think that I don't obviously ask questions about, very rarely, ask questions about whether a child is being tutored or not. But I think this idea of preparation, I think we need to put that maybe a little bit in more realistic context. You know, children are taught to read in P1 and P2. You know, that's when the preparation for academic, you know, learning starts. It doesn't start in P6. And I think there's this perception among some parents, particularly, now my child's in P6, I'll be the teacher, or, you know, I'll pay somebody 25 quid an hour to give them a bit of extra because the school's not maybe doing enough. And that's not the case. I mean, schools, you know, children learn from P1, from the day now that they walk into preschool as well as in the foundation. And all the way through primary school, it doesn't just happen overnight. And I mean, I know I'm maybe exaggerating that point, but I think it's important to realise that academic learning goes on in primary schools irrespective of any selection procedure. You know, the children are learning. These tests allegedly are based on the curriculum. The curriculum obviously has English and maths in it to a very large extent. We are teaching that. What we're being forced to do is, in a sense, and I think this is true, is that it's squeezing it so that children are being assessed as now in November when they've only really just started their final year of primary school and they're being asked questions at a level of difficulty that some would not normally be at this particular point in time. So there's a sense of we have to do a bit of extra pressure to force it through. And that, I think, has an impact on 10-year-olds. It's not overly helpful. It's different to GCSE and A-level where we expect an element of cramming in and high pressure revision, but not at age 10 and 9. I mean, these children are doing these at 10. Yes, it's an 11 plus, but they're 11 when they move. They're 9 and 10 in P6 when they're really, you know, beginning to focus. But I think it's our job as primary schools to make that period of time positive, reinforcing, encouraging, to take the pressure off. But we can't remove the pressure the children are under at home. We just have to hope the parents work with us and that we are honest with our parents as well and how we're doing it.
Well, stay with us for a second. I want to bring in Patrick from Newry. He's just phoned in. Patrick, what's your story?
Well, I think it has created an unfair playing field. You know, in my particular area, my children's school has refused totally to guide the children, teach for the transfer test, and really, the principal is probably keeping in with what has been legislated, but the rest of the schools in the Newry and Mourne area are unofficially, now they're not come out and say it, but they are unofficially teaching their children towards a transfer test.
So as a parent, what would you prefer? Would you prefer that your school was going against the guidance from the department?
Well, I prefer just a level playing field. Whatever direction they take, they should sort of, if it's non-selection, then all primary schools should not teach for it. Because what's happening is the children in my school are going into this transfer test next Saturday at a total disadvantage to all the rest of the children that are sitting at. You know, my children, and I have three going through this at this stage, this is my last one going through, not knowing, going in blind. On, you know, she's tutored. But there's a lot of parents out there who can't afford to have their children tutored. Mm-hmm. So they're going into this test blind, especially if they're not being taught for it. But there is schools in the Newry and Mourne area, primary schools. Now, officially, they'll come out and say they're not doing it. But if you're living here, you will know who's teaching for it and who's not teaching for it. There's breakfast clubs. There's after-school clubs. Their homework is geared towards the transfer test. They're getting GL assessments home with them at the weekends. Whereas our school is getting totally nothing. I mean, absolutely, it's not allowed to be spoke of in the school.
I mean, what do you feel about that when it comes to the politicians, that the system...
Because what's happening is it's the children that's suffering. It's the children that's suffering. First, if it was up to me, I do think they're too young to be taught or to be assessed at 10 and 11, 9 and 10 years of age. But that's the system that's there. I mean, it was supposedly done away with 4 years ago, but it isn't done away with. It has just went underground.
And do you agree with you say that this test isn't the way that they need to be maybe assessed when they're a bit older? Is it something like the Dixon plan, a better idea?
Maybe a bit older, that when they're a bit more mature, they should be tested. But the system is what it is. It's still here.
Andy, you say that you agree with selection, you don't like this test, so should it just come down to the principal of the school or the teacher saying, right, OK, yes, you should go to grammar, so there shouldn't be a test, it should just be done, what, by a report system?
Well, I mean, there's a whole array of brand continual assessment and the computer-assisted assessment and things like that, but, I mean, unlike those other two people you spoke to, I've retired out of the system, so I can disagree with what's going on without any fear of comeback. You've talked to parents this morning and the teachers, and you can understand how important an issue it is to them. You haven't actually talked to children, and that's where it gets really important. Now, how could the powers that be look at this situation, realise the pressure that those children are under, and still let it continue? Because the whole thing here is, remember, the 11-plus and academic selection are two completely different issues. Academic selection can take place right across the 7 years. And look, not really a selection process, it's an assessment process, as opposed to asking those kids, as is happening this year, and I'm sure the kids in P6 this year are looking at the pressure in the P7 ones and going, my goodness, this is going to add it to me next year.
And Andy, I mean, there's no sign of this changing. Sinn Féin are anti-selection. The DUP want to have selection. They're both clearly quite happy to allow the system that exists at the minute to carry on. Maybe quite happy is slightly overstating it, but you know what I mean? It has persisted as long as it has.
Yes.
So what is the answer?
Well, I mean, if you look back when the whole idea of comprehensives was pushed, one of the biggest leaders in this was Shirley Williams, who was going on about the comprehensives were the way forward. She spoke at McGee University and is now 100% against that. So the comprehensive, she doesn't feel that works. But you'll get a lot of people in Northern Ireland say, we should be going to comprehensives. And that's where the thing lies, because you get back to the point I made at the start, grammar school's good, high school's not. And that's not the case, because we've got some tremendous non-selective schools in this country that are putting kids in the right place. And we've got grammar schools putting kids in the right place.
Ralph, have you any hope that things will get better?
Well, I'm not given the one-word answers, Tara, but no. It's the one-word answer. I just don't see it happening. And I think you highlighted, I mean, if we had a government, you could put a full stop there. You know, it's just not happening at that level. I mean, I thought that governments, one of government responsibilities is to make laws. Well, in this case, they haven't done it. They've left it open. They've allowed people to get a foothold, and in fact, what is actually an awful lot more than a foothold, and it's not improving. And I really do, you know, we're all doing our best for the kids, and I think it's very important that we. My interest is in them, but it's this system outside that we're trying to deal with, and it's very, very challenging.
And do you feel sympathy briefly for Patrick, whose school takes a totally different attitude to yours?
Absolutely, complete sympathy, it's a very, very difficult message, and it's a very, very difficult message for that school to give across, very, very difficult message for parents to take. But, you know, what we need is clear, concise, unambiguous government strategy and policy, and we do not have that, and that is the real shame.
Okay, Ralph McGee, thanks very much indeed, and to Andy McMoran and Maggie, and of course Patrick in Newry.